Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Well, we have with us today a distinguished guest, Christopher Makatsouris. He is music director of the Academy of Vocal Arts and really a wonderful friend here in Philadelphia and to the station. And of course, AVA is a real plum here in Philadelphia. And we just wanted to talk to you on a very casual basis about you. And well, you're actually celebrating your 30th year. Is that right?
30 years at AVA.
At AVA.
That's not my 30 years in music.
No.
I go back before that.
Well, tell us a little bit about before that. How did you start in an opera altogether? Were you interested from the very beginning in conducting, or were you an instrumentalist?
My first memories of anything musical at all was during, I suppose I was 3 or 4, and you know, my parents were born in Greece, and they weren't particularly musical. They didn't play an instrument. They didn't push an instrument on. But I do remember, in those days, my mother was very severe. We couldn't listen to music. Those poor people in Greece were dying and starving. Okay. It's sort of like eat every morsel on your plate because of the poor kids that are in Greece.
Right, the starving people.
And she'd be out there with her Victory Garden. So I wasn't particularly thrust into any music. My sisters were. They studied piano. And I found myself after the piano teacher would leave. You know, in those years, piano teachers came to the house,
yes.
Sort of like doctors used to do.
Sure,
too.
Of course.
And I would just meander over to the piano, and just by picking at the notes, I would pick out things that they were doing, their Hanan exercises.
By ear.
Mm-hmm. And that led to my taking piano lessons, and I enjoyed it. I was sort of natural at it. And in fifth grade, I remember Miss Mast. She had 2 subscriptions to the Metropolitan Opera when it came to Philadelphia. You know, I'm sure you know that the Met used to come to Philadelphia.
Yes, they would travel.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I saw my first opera when I believe in fifth grade. It was Louise. And then the second opera I saw was The Marriage of Figaro. But during junior high school, I had a friend who was a singer, and then we bought subscriptions to the local opera company, and we used to regularly go to the opera, and that one thing led to another, and those recitals with Buerling and hearing Warren and Merle and Tucker and Tabaldi, all those early voice, early years, and there was a older fellow, by the name of Robert Sweeney from the Horn and Heart Hour,
yes,
with Stanley Brozier.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he was going to audition for the Copacabana as a production singer downstairs.
Okay.
And he wanted to know whether I'd play his audition for him.
That was, of course, in New York.
That was in New York, on 63rd Street.
Yes, right. The Copa.
The Copa, famous Copa.
Yeah.
And he auditioned. He got the job. And
you played the piano.
I played the piano, and the upstairs lounge, which is actually the first floor, their pianist was off for about 6 weeks. And it's interesting, I remember these names. Doug Cowdy was the head of the music or whatever. I don't know what you call them. He was a graduate of Curtis. He asked me whether I would audition for that and accept the job if they offered it. And I did. And they gave me the job for 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, playing the upstairs lounge.
Now, you were playing pop?
Oh, I was playing pop.
Yeah.
I was playing pop.
I mean, that was
my father was so disappointed. Here I was.
But you improvised. I mean, you weren't.
I improvised. I had lead sheets.
Mm-hmm.
I played for a lot of famous people. Frankly, I don't remember. I do remember playing for Judy Garland, who was in the audience one day.
Oh, that's exciting.
And she got up and she went to sing and we just winged it.
Yeah.
Peggy Lee. I mean, countless people.
Great, yeah, the great ones.
Making a lot of money here. Mm-hmm. I was 17 years old and I was not about to come back and go to Temple or Penn. I just didn't want to do it. But my father was brokenhearted and I took another job, I remember, in the Champagne Gallery at 4th McDougal.
Village.
I love those days in New York.
Well, those were wonderful, yes, special were. Days, I do have to say. It was a different city.
Right.
Yeah. And, of course, music was there, and the clubs were great. I mean, that was something very unusual.
Yeah, I had an agent, I remember having a penthouse where the Café Luxembourg is. It was just wonderful, wonderful.
So you were actually working?
Oh, yeah, I was. I was in New York for about 2 months, mm-hmm. a little bit over 2 months working, and finally gave in to my father and came back and went to Temple.
Sure.
And that led to my playing for a lot of local organizations that used to give local opera performances. And then I got to meet the impresario of the local opera company, Fabiani. This is Fabiani, that's right. Mm-hmm. Aurelio Fabiani, who was another character. He used to play first violin for Stock, Frederick Stock in Chicago.
Okay.
And at the same time, he was the wrestling impresario. So it was a weird combination. But he was a good person to me, because by that time, my father had died, and he sort of like took charge.
You're
right.
Yeah.
And they sent me to Europe.
Really?
Letters of all introduction to the Conservatory in Milan. When I went to Europe, I believe it was 1959. Yes, it was 59. I didn't know where to study. I thought maybe I'd go study with Swarovski, the famous Swarovski in Vienna, who taught everybody. You know, he was.
I only know the crystals.
Zubinata,
Abbas.
I mean, he was the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you went to Italy, you'd study with Previtali at Santa Cecilia. And I thought I would try that. I took the examination, got accepted. I wasn't happy there, so I went up to Milan.
But to study what?
Conducting.
Okay,
conducting.
So you had already arrived at that point when you said, okay.
I started to know scores pretty well from the local companies.
And you felt that maybe this was something you'd be interested
in
doing.
Right, and I had heard a lot of the great singers at that point. And I was accepted in Milan to the conservatory, the Verdi Conservatory there, mm-hmm. where indeed I did study conducting. And then I remember a man who took an interest in me, a French Viscount, Vicomte Dompierre. He was a friend of the woman who ran Elizabeth Arden's in Milan. She introduced me to Scala, and I played the ballet classes there. That led to playing for the chorus of mm-hmm. the productions, which led to playing for some rehearsals. And there's where I really had letters of introduction to Seraphine, whom I did.
But you really did get into the core of what you
I did.
Would want
and,
to be doing.
We were talking about earlier about you have to be ready when some of these things happen. And
mm-hmm.
there was a little bit of arrogance. I was slightly arrogant. I wasn't really a mean kid, but I was confident.
Well, you were cocky.
A little bit. And to this day, I can remember it was the most embarrassing time was. I was playing a rehearsal for Otello with Scala, and the conductor was, I believe, Vuoto, who was the teacher of Muti, a Toscanini protege himself. And all I was supposed to be in charge of was playing the rehearsals for the chorus. Well, in walks Delmonico with the soprano.
Oh, my goodness.
And the conductor said, "We'll take it from the top." Well, I wasn't prepared. I didn't learn that music. I can just remember to this day, I just get sweaty palms when I think of this man raised up from the pit just screaming at me in Italian in front of all these important singers. And I learned my lesson. And I remember Delmonico coming over to me, putting his hand on my shoulder, talking to me in English, because I didn't speak Italian well in those days, saying, "My boy, take it back to practice room or wherever, and you'll be fine. Just work at it." And that's when I swore I would never, ever show up at rehearsal unless
I'm prepared.
Every mark, you know,
But there is so very, very much to conducting opera. I mean, to knowing opera, and it's an enormous task. And I really have developed tremendous respect for conductors, operatic conductors, because it's being a symphonic conductor along with being able to coordinate everything that goes on stage, on stage, and then knowing the music, and of course being a musician. So it's an enormous task.
Well, you yourself being a harpist, I'm sure you know that all those great conductors from the past, they were grounded in opera. People such as Steinberg and Klemperer,
yes,
von Karajan and Reiner, they were all opera conductors.
Really?
And then they went on. And
you mean they started as opera
absolutely.
Conductors? Now, to me, I would almost think you'd go the other way around, because I think it's enough to conduct an orchestra, but then on top of everything
to
else,
know the language
to bring everything in
right.
on top of it. It's very interesting
It's a great learning experience, I mean, to coordinate everything. The human voice is an instrument.
Amazing. And then you have to know what the artist is doing. Well, so here you are, and all of a sudden, you're doing this thing.
Right.
I mean, and you've made that decision. No?
Well, I made the decision with a little bit of help with the circumstance. You know, when I was in Milan studying, I did a series of Beethoven concerts, the symphonies. You had to go out and perform with whatever the orchestra was there, forgotten, had a name to it. And then getting involved with Scala and working with some of these great conductors, and I was just in awe of the way, as you said, they would know everything. They would know the words. They would know the feeling of the composer or the intent of the composer. Why is it marked forte? Why did he say those words piano? Why did he say it forte?
That's interesting.
And the colorations and the different styles. And it was just I was in awe of this.
Revelation.
And then the singers in those days were so intense. They'd come in and everything had structure to it. And I remember... Even Max Rudolph, who later got to be a friend of mine and the teacher of mine, he believed in that you never were entitled to an opinion unless you knew the facts. You had to be grounded in knowing what everything was on that printed score, and not just the music, but the intention of the composer and other works of the composer, too, and see how it fit in the development of the composer.
Well, now, you just said something. The singers also were very... Everything was very structured.
Yes, it was.
Now, compare that to what goes on now.
Oh, I love what goes on now. And I'm not making this in the sense of saying it was better then or it's better now. I'm not saying that. It's just different.
Different and freer.
Well, for instance, I can remember you'd walk into a rehearsal with Milanov or Tabaldi and... You'd have to have a jacket on. Even the conductor would say, "Permesso, signora," you know, and she'd say, "Oh, well, of course, please take off your jacket." And no matter what you worked on, it was a performance. So even when they were vocalizing, they'd perform as they're vocalizing. It was...
That really does add something.
Oh, yes, it does. And that's a dimension. New jeans were not allowed.
No, and the drama of it all, and the seriousness and the importance of what you were doing.
You'd step on that stage at Scala, and you'd think about, oh, my goodness, Caruso was here. This theater was bombed, and it was opened up again after the war with Toscanini, and all these great personages were there. And it wasn't fearsome, but... You just felt the grandeur and the timelessness of what's going on, these masters, and you see these busts of these composers, and you thought, oh my word, this is important stuff here.
Very imposing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now, what is happening now with opera? We have a problem, of course, with subsidy of everything in music. But this terrible thing that happened with the Met, and they were finally bailed out by Toll Brothers. But to think that a house of that size and reputation would have to worry about whether they can have a season or not is really overwhelming.
Well, I think the new techniques that are happening now, the filming of these performances on TV, I think that's very important, is drawing in new audiences.
Well, you know, years ago, opera was not the thing that audiences, I mean, that was a very specialized audience. Now, for some reason, the younger generation is very, very interested in opera. And that's really something that has changed very, very dramatically. And I always say maybe it's because they've been brought up with television, because they're used to seeing things, you know, because it is a spectacle. So tell us a little AVA when you came back to Philadelphia. What happened? Well, was AVA? What was it doing?
I had gone out and done opera on the road, so to speak, and went to the American provinces and conducted, and it was fine, but it wasn't Scott or it wasn't any of these important,
spoiled,
you know, singers who spent years at refining one line or something. But there were very good singers, and I just didn't really enjoy it that much. You know, you put together an opera, you're talking about what's happening today. Well, to go to the provinces in those years and have three rehearsals to put on the Tosca, why? You're not going to attract new audiences with that.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get the same audiences coming back listening to their favorite tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't doing making it for me. And I started to enjoy teaching. And I would be an assistant with the local opera company and work with, all these famous names. And that kept my desire to be in the big, you know, area. I went out to San Francisco and I worked out there for a while. And I enjoyed that a lot. But eventually, I had a friend. I don't know whether you know who Ingrid Bjoner. Ingrid Bjoner was a wonderful singer, Scandinavian singer. Mm-hmm. She sang at the Met, and she opened the Bayerstadt opera after the war. She was a great friend of Savalas,
mm-hmm,
and Max Rudolph. She sang at the Met. She was Flachstadt's only student. She had one of those big, gleaming, domey-like Wagnerian voices.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a friend of Max's. So, and Max Rudolph. Max Rudolph was just coming into Curtis at that point as being the music, the opera head of the opera, with Gina Yiannopoulos, another Greek. And she talked to Maestro Rudolph about me, and he was interested maybe in hiring me to teach there. And we had an interview, and he hired me, and I was there for about 7 or 8 years. And it was glorious years. And at the same time when Delancey left Curtis,
mm-hmm,
and the opera department sort of changed.
He wasn't terribly supportive of...
Well, he wasn't, but at the same time, he was supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked to actually stay on, even though the opera department had essentially closed down. And I think Boris Skoldovsky took over. At the same time this was happening, the Academy of Vocal Arts was changing directors, too. So what they did, the board of directors of Academy of Vocal Arts asked the old team from the outgoing Curtis Opera Department, so to speak, to move over to AVA. So I went along with, and I went over to AVA.
So it was kind of an existing thing.
Yes, right. And as you say, I've been there for 30 years.
And then all these years went by. It's 30 years. Well, of course. But AVA has grown. I mean, I would say that the products of AVA are, many of them are fantastic singers and have been enormously successful. Denise Stewart is here. Denise, what is your position there? Give us an exact description. We know what you do, but for the audience.
I'm the director of marketing and public relations at the Academy of Vocal Arts, but I'm also an AVA alumna.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So you've been there, done that, right?
Absolutely.
And, well, since Maestro Makatsouris has been there, tell us what has happened, really, in terms of the growth of the... It's a school.
It is a school in a sense, but it's basically, I would say, if you had to compare to, say, a doctor's career, it's more like a residency, mm-hmm, than medical school. It's basically a launching pad for some of the finest, most accomplished young singers in the world. It's not just American singers, it's international cadre of singers there. And they are one foot in the professional world and one foot in the polishing up their product. And they come to, I consider it the best place in the world to polish that product. And that is primarily because of the incredible faculty, the vocal coaches, but in particular, they get to work with Maestro Makatsoris, and he is a genius. And
She's here, because you're not allowed to say that.
No, I mean, to have an opportunity to work with him. I sometimes, you know, I don't sing much anymore, but sometimes I'll stop by and I'll watch him working with some singers, and he's torturing them, and he's demanding perfection and demanding and demanding. And I see some faces, they look almost like they're going to burst into tears, and I have to stop myself from running in saying, "You lucky stiff. Mm-hmm. You have no idea how lucky and fortunate you are. So suck it up, bring and listen and absorb what he's saying to you."
Now, these singers apply to be accepted at ABA, is that right?
Oh, well, you can only be accepted by audition. And that really is the sole criteria for admission. They choose the finest voices, and that is how you get into ABA. And they come from everywhere, and it's a four-year program. Some of them don't even get through the full 4 years before they're off singing at the Met and places all over the world, and they'll come back to polish something with Maestro when they're preparing roles. But they're launching, and we've had incredible successes, particularly in recent years. Yes. We seem to be on a roll, mm-hmm. and we've had wonderful singers, and they're singing all over the world.
Is there any other place like that? Would you say?
Well, there are a lot of good centers. There are, you know, a lot of opera companies today have their own centers where they do their training. And but I think we have a especially unique group of singers at ABA that come to ABA. Listening to what you're saying, they are special. There's no question about it. And what's happening now? Well, for instance, Borg Bilili, I'll bring up one singer. He was in his third year at ABA. Generally, it's a four-year course. Mm-hmm. He was off to sing a lead at Scala. He sang the lead in Lucrezia Borgia by Donizetti. Mm-hmm. And his next assignment was to come back to ABA and sing in the chorus. Uh-huh. So, and they love it. They love it. They're so collegial, and they support one another. And
well, yes, there is that sense. When you go to AVA and you right. do to some of the events, you really do feel that. It's
and they help one another. You know,
it's a wonderful
thing. It's like when you're in an orchestra and your partner, let's say you're in a certain stand, you know what your partner, you have a sense of what's happening there. It's likewise at AVA that one soprano knows what the tenor, well, he's not feeling so well, the middle voice is a little weak today, let me support that.
And that's a wonderful thing impart. Right. I mean, really, when you think of performers as being really quite egotistical, a lot of them, I mean, instrumentalists as well, but to have that sense of teamwork is really amazing. And to instill that, I think, is really something very special. And I think that's what you feel when you go to ABA. Anyone that goes there to observe or to a performance, you sense that this is a complete effort of everyone that is involved. And that is really amazing.
Well, and I love it when they go out and they sing with these conductors, some of them very important conductors like Mappano and Telemann and some really great conductors. And the conductors love ABA singers. They just love them. Because they're what Mucci is crazy about, Stephen.
Well, Costello, you know? Yes, of course.
Because of his work ethic and the fact he listens and he hears the trumpets and he hears, I'm singing this.
Wasn't he a trumpet player?
Yes, he was.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
He's cheating.
Maybe.
That's not.
But they're really a special group because of that.
And, now, your coaching, I know, is really, really good. Well, when do you start with that? I mean, they come and they prepare something, or is it for the roles, or is it just studying the arias?
It's both. Well, yeah.
At what level are you? This is a very high level that you begin to really refine it, don't you?
Yeah, it's a high level. I don't know.
They are at a very high level, and then comes the...
As far as their education is, most of the singers already have their bachelor's degrees, and most of them have master's degrees, so they have that to go.
Well, I mean singing.
But, right.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's so interesting about it is that we've had some singers who have gone on and made big names for themselves, who when they auditioned, you would get some, we have a panel that listens to the singers. You know, I'm on there, and then voice teachers, and the executive director, Kevin McDowell. And you have a singer, for instance, with Back in the Mind telling you with Stephen. Well, when it came down to judging him, mostly everybody said, oh, God, no. Really, it's very interesting.
Really?
And there were just me and somebody else, I won't go into it, who said, no, but it's just for granted we're going to take this fellow. I think that's where the experience ear comes in. You know, that's where the experience ear comes in. So it's really difficult to say what will work and what won't work unless you have a background of being able to make that distinction. Now, Stephen's Eileen Perez, who,
yes,
you know, soprano, and they're married.
Mm-hmm.
She's an example the other way. She auditioned for us out in Chicago. We go out to Chicago to and listen to singers. Kevin goes out there, McDowell, with the accompanist. And generally, if he hears somebody, and you can recommend them, they have to come here and sing for us. We came back, and he says, I hope you don't mind, but this soprano was just so glorious. I just told her right off, you're accepted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, short of my saying, absolutely not, but I didn't. I mean, that was obvious. So singers is
yes,
you have to know where you're coming from,
mm-hmm,
and you have to think ahead. Corelli, when he said, Price, when she was young, she had that constant little fast quiver. Well, that, it worked that, itself out. Corelli, yeah, had that bleat.
Mm-hmm.
That worked itself out. You have to.
Oh, but there are those magical qualities that you really can't, you know, they come across.
Yearlings pushing it to get sharp.
Oh,
and oh,
yeah, you
gosh,
know it. But then there's something beyond that,
oh,
which is,
right,
of course, like any artist, there is that the understanding of what you're doing, the emotion, you know, that you transmit to the audience. I mean, technically, sure, there's always something to work on. But
right,
I do think there is a magical quality that one feels, right, in certain artists. Now, what's happening with the season? You have a very interesting season. Denise, you were telling me that it's kind of split up, isn't it, into two productions.
We are featuring Gaetano Donizetti this year. We're doing three operas by him. And right now we're currently doing Anna Bolena. And that is doing very, very well. We have singers at AVA whose voices are particularly suited for this bel canto repertoire. So we're giving them the opportunity to do this one, which is not done very frequently. And then we have Don Pasquale, which is done frequently, and Lucia di Lammermoor, another very popular opera. So, you know, part of the Academy of Vocal Arts, we want to give singers the opportunity to really learn and perform roles that they will perform in their careers.
Pretty much repertoire.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've heard from people who audition singers out there that a lot of singers know arias, but they don't know whole roles. AVA really is unique, and I think this is what sets it apart from other young artist programs, at least in this country, that instead of understudying when you're part of, say, an opera company's young artist program, instead of understudying a role, you perform the role. You get it into your voice, you get it into your body, you get it into your mind. So if that opportunity comes up and, my goodness, somebody gets sick, Miss Angela Mead can step in and sing Hernani at the Met on 48 hours notice.
Not a bed.
Not that she sang that at AVA, but the point is that they learn whole roles at AVA.
Now, what about contemporary operas?
Well, yes, I agree.
Tough.
Well, look, you're talking to a person who studied composing, and I had even some of my stuff played by the composers. What was it called? Composers Forum? What was,
yes,
it?
Yes, Composers Forum.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I remember that. And sure, I'd love to do more contemporary works.
What is the training? I always say this, even with instrumentalists. I mean, you learn and you practice certain intervals and things like that. But, you know, it's the same thing with singing. Things are a lot different now. There are all kinds of strange, well, for ear training and so on, very, very difficult, I would think, dissonance, you know, and the meter and so on. What happens? You have to prepare differently, don't you?
Well, you know, we do have a lot of singers that go out. It's not that they're at AVA all the time. They accept work on the outside. And they have done contemporary work. You have to be a good musician to sing a lot of that.
You
have to be a really good musician for that. And you have to have a good sense of pitch.
Yes, because of the intervals, sure.
Absolutely. Which I'm thinking right now about how I think pitch sense is not as good as it should be with a lot of singers recently. And that's a big thing with me. Tuning up of that instrument is so important.
Yes, and it's very difficult.
I think, certainly, in
contemporary music, it's hard.
Well, there are local organizations that do contemporary music, and our singers partake of them. We at AVA, well, we used to do a little bit more than what we do. I'd love to get on the case, AVA's case, and do more contemporary work. I would love it.
Did we start something?
No, I wish you would.
Well, but the point is, you know, it's like anything else. We were talking about new music, and when Bernstein came and brought all the Mahler symphonies out, you know, they were talking about, oh, you know, this stuff is never really performed a lot. Well, when was that written? 1905, 1906? And in 1960 or something like that, all of a sudden, there's a big Mahler thing. Well, this goes on with music, and it takes, what, 100 years before something is seasoned enough to perhaps edge its way into the repertoire. I think that's what's happening with opera. What is it? The Ballad of Baby Doe? What is that?
Ballad of Baby Doe.
From
the 50s.
Contemporary, yeah. But 50s. Mm-hmm. We're 2008 now.
Right.
Our big contemporary opera this season is La Fiamma by Respighi, and that's from the 1930s.
I love Respighi's music. So tell us about that. I know you're going to be having several performances in when is it, January?
January 23rd, 24th, and 27th. January 23rd and 4th is at the Perlman Theater at the Kimmel Center, and the 27th at the Haverford School's Centennial Hall.
Which is the way you usually do it, isn't that? You divide it up.
Yes. Now, this is not going to be a staged opera. This is going to be in concert.
Because
since we're doing it at the center here, Ryzen. Well, of course, Respighi is a great colorist. I mean, we all know that there's the pines.
The Martyr of Saint Sebastian, what is that? That's Debussy. Very, very difficult, I would think.
Right.
Wouldn't that be something very difficult?
Well, that takes a lot of chorus. Now, we don't have a chorus at AVA. We sometimes go out for a chorus and use local organizations and we have to spend time training them. The accent for us has to be on non-choral works. And if there is too much choral work, we just don't do it.
Okay.
Or we cut some of it, at least things that are, I hate to say, not essential, because every note of a score is essential.
Well, the L'Enfant et les Sortilèges,
right,
Ravel.
Great work.
What year? I mean, was it 100 years? No, it's not 100 years, but what, 1920?
When you really think about Caruso sang contemporary opera. He sang Bohème,
really?
Which was written.
Well, of course, yes.
But he sang Bohème. He sang Cavalleria.
But that was very melodic. I mean,
that's the kind of music that was written at the same time that Stravinsky was doing The Rite of Spring in 1908.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't even, we were just still doing, Mascagni was still contemporary. So we had all these different styles going on. So, but what I consider, we have done at AVA, the composer that lives in the Hebrides, Maxwell Davies.
Oh, yes.
We did The Lighthouse, which was very contemporary.
His
That's what I call
is,
really contemporary. Yes. You know, Menotti to me, it really isn't. He's really a throwback to the veristic school forward.
Mm-hmm. It's a whole different approach.
Well, they're doing a lot of Adam music and, you know, Nixon in China and, and Dead Men Walking. There you go.
Well, yes, of course. That's fair. But that's... There is something to that that is very accessible, I think. It's very depressing. Of course, the subject matter is very, very upsetting. But John Packard, that was his, and he's, of course, an alumnus.
Right.
And Joyce DiDonato as well.
Another great, great singers that are making fabulous careers. And, of course, I think you're probably so used to that now. At some point, Maestro's shrugging his shoulders. Oh, well, that's what we do, right?
We could name drop operatically and be here for days.
Right.
Well, we are, of course, very proud here at WRTI to run the AVA performances every season. And hopefully you will just keep doing what you're doing and supplying us with great stars of the future. and the present, and 30 years.
Well, you know, it's a big financial crunch, as we all know, going out there. And the money is hard to come by, and people investments are just going down the tubes. But, you know, the singers are out there. There's still young voices out there waiting to be heard and to be hopefully trained and encouraged. So there's no lessening of those great young voices that are still out there potentially. So we'll be around, AVA. That's what
we're
about.
You'll be around and you'll be doing contemporary operas, right?
I certainly want to.
Wonderful to have you here, Maestro Christopher Mancasores and Denise Stewart. Thank you so much for visiting with us.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you very much, Jill.